One of my favourite films when I was growing up was The Wizard of Oz. I even got to play Dorothy in a school production. I was just entering my teens. It wasn't a musical version, but I still got the chance to sing those immortal lyrics. I'm not going to sing to you now. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops, and way above the chimney tops, that's where you'll find me. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Birds fly over the rainbow. Why then, oh why can't I? Dorothy Gale is an orphaned teenager. She lives with her Auntie M and her Uncle N. Henry on a Kansas farm in the early 1900s. Like most teens, in fact, like most adults, if we're honest, she imagined that the grass was greener on the other side. More specifically, in Dorothy's case, that it was brighter somewhere over the rainbow. Getting caught out when a tornado strikes the farm before she has chance to take shelter, Dorothy gets to taste the world of her dreams, and she discovers that it isn't what she expected at all. Life rarely is. That's a truth that was very familiar to David, the writer of our psalm. As a young man, David had killed Goliath. And when we read about his heroic deeds, we might have expected that praise and glory would follow from a grateful King Saul. But did David get his knighthood? Did he get his reward? Well, ultimately, he got a king who threw spears at him and jealously chased him and his men all over the countryside for years. And once Saul had died and David became king, we might have expected that he lived comfortably, at rest and in peace, confident in the rigors of his kingship. But instead, his desires led him horribly astray. His friends and advisors betrayed him. His own son plotted against him. There was actually little peace, rest, or security in many parts of his kingship. Somewhere Over the Rainbow is about dreams and longing, about perhaps reaching for the unobtainable as an escape from reality. But our psalm this morning shows us a very different path through reality. David doesn't deny the problems and difficulties of life. He states them quite openly. But he chooses not to dwell on them. Instead, he fills his heart and his thoughts with God. Truly, my soul finds rest in God. My salvation comes from him. Truly, he is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I shall never be shaken. The rest that the psalmist describes is comfort, security, peace of mind. For some people today, perhaps particularly the younger generation, these things come from belonging to the in crowd, from moving with the times, from sampling the empowerment that comes with the latest technologies and ideas. But gadgets and new ideas become old and defunct, and crowds, rather like sheep, can lead you astray, and you're left dreaming of the next best thing. As we get older, we take comfort and security in our homes, our jobs, our relationships, the lives that we have built for ourselves. But jobs can be lost, relationships can break down, and homes can disappear from around us, and we're left dreaming of what might have been. As we get older still, we find comfort and instability. No surprises, no shifts or changes in gear. But doesn't change have a habit of happening to us anyway? And we find perhaps that we've run out of dreams. Truly, my soul finds rest in God. My salvation comes from him. Biblical writers were fascinated by earthquakes. They referred to them often to make their point. In a very literal sense, earthquakes threaten the stability of life. So they're a very good illustration of what happens when our dreams and assumptions, the ones that things that we've built up around ourselves, are shaken and perhaps shattered. We like to think of the earth as rock solid, but sometimes the earth moves. And we're easily lured into thinking the same things about our lives. We expect stability. We expect things will go as we plan and dream for them to. We expect our lives to be rock solid. But then something unexpected or traumatic happens. And everything that we thought secure about our lives is suddenly shaken loose. When this happens to him, the psalmist finds hope and comfort in God alone. Truly my soul finds rest in God. Truly he is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I shall never be shaken. I've only covered the first couple of verses so far, but the first thing that struck me about our psalm this morning as I was reading it was, unusually for the psalms, it doesn't contain any requests. It doesn't ask God for anything. In fact, it doesn't even address God directly at all, except in an aside, a declaration at the end, when the psalmist repeats what he has heard, what he knows to be true, profoundly true of the Lord. The entire psalm is as if he was talking to himself or speaking to others to encourage them to hold fast to the same truth that sustains and encourages him. Though it's not directed at God, every word is God-centered. Because God is the only reality that matters in his life. God is his rock, his fortress, his salvation. These are strong and powerful images that counter the very real difficulties and pressures that King David was facing. We read in verses 3 and 4, how long will you assault me? Would all of you throw me down this leaning wall, this tottering fence? Surely they intend to topple me from my lofty place. They take delight in lies, with their mouths they bless, but in their hearts they curse. David has expressed his unwavering trust in the Lord, and in spite of the opposition he is facing. But life has always been a roller coaster for him. Glory and adulation matched in equal measure by opposition and betrayal. But God has been constant and faithful throughout. So despite his obviously precarious situation, David asks nothing. He acknowledges the reality of his situation, but he doesn't let it overwhelm him or define who he is. He states his case, and then he simply waits on and rests in the Lord. Verse 5. Yes, my soul, find rest in God. My hope comes from him. Truly, he is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I shall not be shaken. The Psalms don't gloss over the reality of fear and pain, uncertainty and discontent. The whole of the human condition is written within them. They speak for us as well as to us. And that's why the writer of Psalm 62 emphasizes again and again that God is our rock and our salvation, because he alone can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. When we are helpless and hopeless, God is the rock on which we stand. And the psalmist is not only speaking for himself, but he is encouraging others to trust in God as he does. God is a rock. He alone is our place of strength, unmovable and secure. when everything else around us changes and shifts. And so we read in 1 Samuel, "There is no one holy like the Lord. There is no one besides you. There is no rock like our God." God is our salvation. He alone is our rescuer and deliverer. He knows what we are like. He knows our helpless state, and he reaches in. So we read in John, "For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. And whoever has the Son has life. Whoever does not have the Son does not have life." And God is our hope. He alone is our promise for the future and our surety in the present. So we read in 1 Peter, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that will never perish, spoil, or fade." David's knowledge of God is his soul's pathway to finding refuge in God in the midst of his trials, in the midst of all the difficulties and struggles of life. And confident of this as a personal truth, he turns to you and me, to those who read these words, and says to us in verse 8, "Trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your hearts to him, for God is our refuge." We aren't just to trust God in the good moments or the bad moments, but in all the ordinary moments in between. To trust in God in every moment, to trust only in him, and to trust always in him. It's the same exhortation we heard read in our gospel reading this morning, to recognize that all our worth comes from the love that the Father has for his creation, that nothing we can say or do, worry or dream about can add or subtract from the love that he bears us. But to recognize also the dangers in giving ourselves over to the pursuit of anything but loving and serving our God. God not only wants us to trust him, but he wants us to pour out our hearts and our souls to him too. He already knows every trial and trouble we are facing, every opportunity and promise for the future. But he wants for us to come to him and talk to him about it, to know him through his word, to know him more fully, to rest in him completely. David didn't actually need to express his hopes or his fears. He simply declared his confidence in the Lord, the one he trusted was in every conscious moment. And as we come to know God more fully, so we come to know ourselves and the reality of our human condition. And so we come to lean on God more surely and more heavily. So we had in verse 9, "Surely the lowborn are but a breath, the highborn are but a lie. If weighed on a balance, they are nothing. Together they are only a breath. Whether you are rich or poor, gifted or not, ultimately you are still only human. Here today, gone tomorrow." A truth echoed in the New Testament by James. "Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes." There is no one alive, no matter what their power or status, who can deliver us from the consequences of sin and disobedience against God. We haven't got the strength within ourselves. God and God alone can. can do this. He has done this for us in Jesus Christ. There is nothing that we can do or strive for that will achieve the same end either. Do not trust in extortion or put vain hope in stolen goods. Though your riches increase, do not set your heart on them. Earthly wealth and possessions will disappear, and all the things on which we set our hopes and dreams will pass into nothing. But God will not. One thing God has spoken, two things I have heard. Power belongs to you, God, and with you, Lord, is unfailing love. As I was actually typing those words, I had the BBC News website up in the background, and it flashed up a little report that there had been this terrorist attack in Barcelona. A van had been driven into crowds on the main tourist shopping street, killing 13 and injuring hundreds more. We live in a fallen world, yet it is also a world for which Christ gave himself on the cross, at the hands of sinful men, to bring forgiveness and hope for the present as well as the future. Love in the face of adversity is what distinguishes the Christian. Again, back in John, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. This is a time not only when we should be showing love to one another, to our brothers and sisters in Christ, but to all who need to feel the warmth and the confidence of that love in the cold aftermath of loss. To pray also for both victim and perpetrator, for all who need the grace and mercy of Christ to break into their lives, to break into hatred, fear and bitterness, to pour reality into dreams, to seize every opportunity to speak of God's love and man's need, and to hold fast to the truth. My soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from him. In The Wizard of Oz, after all her journeys were over, Dorothy discovered that what she had longed for had been right in front of her all the time. My soul finds rest in God alone. Alone means nothing added, nothing wanting. Jesus Christ is sufficient for all our needs. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest.